The Paris Agreement was, I suppose, monumental in the sense that it brought together countries from all over the world to sign a unilateral agreement on the need to address climate change. Its significance lies in the fact that you had 195 countries and they all agreed and acknowledged that climate change is now a serious threat. So the agreement provided an impetus for more ambition around acting on climate change and a more progressive approach. The agreement agreed to hold temperature to well below 2 degrees by 2100 and to pursue efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees.
Now, of course, they have no control over the weather, but what they do have control of is how our pollution affects the weather. So what were the implications of trying to bring that temperature down and holding it?
We know now that a 2-degree rise in temperature above pre-industrial levels would have significant impacts on our own place here on planet Earth and the place of other species that we share this planet with. And it would not only make life very, very difficult for us here in Ireland, but for countries, communities that are a lot more vulnerable than we are, yet who contribute less to climate change, would suffer a lot more. So in terms of our own survival, we have no choice but to aim to keep it at that 2 degree.
But what are the implications of keeping it at that 2 degree? I mean, what did countries sign up to doing?
That's where the agreement probably falls in terms of detail. So the mechanism provided to keep to that 2 degree are these national pledges, which would be reviewed every 5 years. However, when we look at these pledges, they don't actually add up to a 2 degree limit. They actually add up to around between 2.7 and 3.7. So that's where the challenge lies going ahead, is that if we have these national pledges, and when combined, they don't even have us in that safe operating space, we need to actually get back to the table and then have a look and see, well, how can we take more radical, urgent action? So the implications for society, incredibly challenging over the next number of decades.
So it's high on aspiration, less concrete on detail. A year later, have we in Ireland done anything?
In Ireland, then, we have legislated for climate change through our Climate Action and Low Carbon Development Act. It came in last December in 2015. The problem in Ireland is that during the economic recession, our emissions actually went down. However, because of economic growth, they're now going up, particularly in the transport sector and from agriculture as a result of increasing our national herd size. So unfortunately, we will miss our 2020 targets. They're targets from the European Union. The chances of our meeting our 2030 targets is becoming more challenging.
Are we doing anything at all? I mean, I thought we did bring in tax incentives for cars and things like that. And, you know, you see less old cars on the road nowadays.
What the government, I suppose, have been saying is that we need to first get back into a stable position in terms of our economy, and then we'll have the necessary finances to actually address the climate problem.
But still, we're going to be fined by Europe, aren't we?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think what we're doing is essentially kicking the can down the road. We don't have time to do that. Our emissions are 3% above 1990 levels. That was 26 years ago. And yet we plan on reducing them down by 80% in the next 34 years.
By 80%? We'll never do that, will we?
By the way things are going at the moment, it will be incredibly challenging and it will require radical transformation. Transformation being the key word.
Like people on bikes all the time or electric cars or what?
It's a radical change across all our sectors. I mean, people on bikes, that's fine. That doesn't work for everybody. If you live in a rural area, you may need to commute by car for long distances. But it needs to be joint up thinking. We need to almost Paris-proof all of our policies. When we look at our policies, we need to then look at, well, what are we committed to? And then what does this mean? So this 2 degree, 1.5 degree limit, what does that mean in terms of how we design and implement our policies? If it means that we are off the mark in terms of keeping to that temperature rise, well, then we just need to go back to the table.
I mean, one of the signatories was the United States of America to the Paris Agreement. However, that was when they were under the Democrats who believed the climate change was a reality. We now have a president of the United States who really doesn't. I know he's going back a little bit, but not much. Does that worry you?
Yes. And in some respects, it's not so much Trump himself, more the people that he is appointing to the various positions, that they're actually quite worrying in terms of their relationships with big oil, big fossil fuel sectors, and the kind of lobbying power that exists behind a lot of those relationships. I don't think Trump is actually a climate denier, but he's just taking a particular path and not responding to it.
Do you think that that's going to have a significant impact? Because if you think of a big polluter like China, if they look at America and say, well, they're not concerned about it, why should we?
Yeah, well, first of all, on the China front, I think we tend to look to China as the big polluter, but they're actually making considerable gains when it comes to renewable technology. China and a lot of other countries that we would have seen maybe as big polluters are almost taking the lead in a lot of this. We've stopped looking to the US. Well, in some respects, I think, unfortunately, it's not going to help the public conversation around climate change in the US. But having said that, certainly here in Ireland, when Trump was elected, I was amazed by how prevalent the words climate change were featured in our media and in our public conversations on the radio and so on. It's the one thing that people go to almost when they talk about Trump's policy. Well, what does he say about climate change? So there's almost a silver lining here in the sense that we are talking more about it. And that in itself is a good thing. The only thing is that with the Paris Agreement, countries are locked into this kind of 3-year commitment, and they need to give 1 year notice if they want to withdraw. So I mean, there's some hope there that his 4-year presidency will be that, just 4 years.
So generally, in 1 year on, are you happy, depressed, hopeful? What would you say as an environmental justice officer with the Jesuits that this Paris Agreement, has it done anything?
It's a mixture of both, to be honest. I'm very hopeful that we're actually legislating now for climate change, that we have these universal agreements, that there's political consensus in line with what we know from science. My concern is that the action is not urgent and not radical enough based on what we know in terms of the scientific evidence that's coming out, and that we're sitting on the fence with a lot of the decisions that we need to take. So that's one concern. I think the other concern is around finance, for example. In the Paris Agreement, there is a commitment to provide a floor of $100 billion per year to countries that are at the forefront of climate change. And Ireland, for example, have only committed to around 50 cents per capita. And that pales in comparison to the amount of money that's been directed to fossil fuel companies in the form of fossil fuel subsidies. If that money was redirected towards renewable energy, towards climate mitigation and adaptation, we would probably achieve the goals of the Paris Agreement a lot quicker.
And are you referring there to developing countries that are not able to finance the kind of things that need to be done?
COP 22 was happening in Marrakesh, and there a lot of the developing countries agreed to be 100% renewable by 2050. So developing countries are already actually taking a leading role. The issue there is that they really are at the forefront of climate change in terms of drought, in terms of flooding and so on. I read a figure last week that said that the impact of climate-related disasters is about 13% of the GDP of developing countries, as opposed to 2% of the GDP of developed countries. And yet,
in simple language, they're affected six times more. Harshly.
Yeah, absolutely. And even for a country like Ireland with a relatively small population, our footprint, our carbon outputs is so much more significant than, say, a population of Malawi or Zimbabwe. So that's where the whole climate justice angle comes in. So there's a massive responsibility there in countries like Ireland to really take the lead in terms of acknowledging our responsibility and acknowledging the role that we play in terms of bringing about a more just world on the climate change front.
It can all seem a bit abstract, can't it? It's all out there and the politicians need to do it and big business and government needs to do it. But for ordinary people, what can they do?
It's a very good question. I think essentially where we're at is that we need to reconnect with our natural world. And climate change is just a symptom of our disconnection. Climate change can often seem like a very abstract concept. It's very hard to get our head around sometimes. In terms of what communities can do, it's really about reconnecting with our local environment, and this is strongly emphasized within the encyclical, it's reconnecting through community networks, whether it's through tidy towns groups, whether it's through biodiversity groups, whether it's through local co-op systems, again emphasized in the encyclical. So I think it's about taking something that's very abstract and very global and bringing it down to the local level and bringing it down to things that we really, really care about: family, friends, local networks, local communities, and using those realms in terms of change for a better world.